So welcome to this 9-day retreat here at in North Perth. Just watching you come in, most of you have been on these retreats before. Some maybe have come for the first time on this meditation retreat. But please know that the retreats which are held here every year, twice usually, in Easter and the November time, we make sure that these retreats are tailored for each individual person. So those people who have meditated many, many times can benefit from meditating a lot. Those people who are just beginners in meditation can still benefit by having the opportunities to do as much meditation as they feel appropriate. No worries, please come in. Because you may have seen the schedule which is on the board, but those schedules are not to be taken too seriously. The first thing I would say of this retreat, especially for the first few days, just don't push yourself too hard. Just take it easy, rest, be gentle, be kind. Because that was one of the major teachings of the Buddha. In fact, the very first teaching he gave was called the Middle Path, where he said, don't go to the extremes of sensory indulgence, and number two, of doing things which tire and weaken the body. Which means that for the first few days, you know, you'll probably find, especially those of you who come from overseas, that you'll be tired. You've got to adapt to the time zone and also to the to the new place, the new climate. So just be kind to yourself for the first few days. If you decide you're going to get up at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock and then you're just going to go and get enlightened or else. If it's the enlightened or bust mentality, I guarantee you'll bust way before you get enlightened. So in other words, we don't push ourselves, we just guide ourselves gently, mindfully, wisely into meditation. And we take time to do this. One of the wonderful advantages of a 9-day retreat is we have that time. So give yourself one or two days to accustom to the new routine. In other words, when you wake up in the morning, maybe if you wish, don't even set your alarm clock and just see what happens. When you first wake up, just get up and see what time it is. During this retreat, there is no such thing as you have to be here at this particular time. If you feel like you need to take a rest, go and take a rest any time of the day. Because you'll find with that gentleness and that kindness towards your body, you'll find after a while that your mind will respond. I know that sometimes people, they do have to catch up on their sleep the first few days. I often tell the story. The first time I noticed this was a retreat I was teaching in Sydney many years ago. And a woman came on that retreat straight from work. She was an executive in Sydney. She arrived very late on a Friday evening. And I only saw her the following day because she hadn't got the time to check in before she arrived. And the following day, she told me what she was doing. And I told her, for the first few days, just rest and just relax. And when your body is relaxed and rested, then you can begin the meditation. And she took me at my word. For the first 3 days, she would get up at 7 o'clock for breakfast. Just before breakfast, she would get out of her bed. And after breakfast, she'd go back to bed again. And she was sharing a room with other meditators. And she told me that the other girls in her dormitory, another 3 girls, they kept on looking at her with... She thought it was anger, and I said, no, it's jealousy, because they would love to do the same, they don't have the guts to do it. And so she rested a lot for the first few days. She got up in before lunch, did a bit of meditation, maybe a little bit in the afternoon, but not much. For the first 2 or 3 days, she had to calm her body by resting it, by relaxing it, to take away the stress of her lifestyle. So after 3 days, she had hardly meditated at all. But for the next 3 days, because her body was relaxed and rested, the next 3 days she caught up with everybody else. And for the last 3 days, She went way beyond what the other meditators were experiencing. She was one of the star meditators of that retreat. And I always like to tell that story, because the reason why by the end of the retreat she had such wonderful meditation was very much due to how she approached the whole path of meditation over 9 days. She was gentle and kind and wise. She recognized what her body needed, and she responded to that. I'm not saying that everybody needs to sleep until breakfast and just get up afterwards. I'm not saying everybody, maybe if you're very tired, you can ask your friend to bring you breakfast in bed. Maybe that's going a bit too far. The point is that we have to be gentle and kind to our body to begin with. If you push very hard at the beginning, you'll find your body gets tense. When your body gets tense, the mind will also get tense. And you'll never be able to get deep in meditation. If you understand that meditation is learning how to relax the mind in the same way you relax the body, you understand that the more effort and control and tightness and force which you give to your mind, the less successful the meditation will be. If you look at meditation as just the relaxing of the mind, the calming of the mind, making it peaceful, making it still, making it full of ease, comfort, contentment and happiness. If you understand what meditation truly is, you can see why sometimes some people have no opportunity of experiencing that peace and contentment, that brightness of the mind. They decide to set themselves a schedule, getting up at a certain time, meditating for an hour, sitting for 10 minutes, walking for 10 minutes and more meditation. No matter what they feel like, they just keep pushing through. People like that, they get lots of tension in their body and tension in their mind. Sure, they can sit for long periods, but they never have the peace and the happiness, the freedom of the mind. When the Buddha talked about meditation being letting go, the one thing above all we're letting go of is our will, our choosing, our controller. That's what we mean by letting go. Sometimes when people say about letting go, they don't know how to let go. Really, it's not you don't know how to let go, you don't know what to let go of. What we really want to let go of in this meditation retreat is this thing inside of us which keeps pushing us this way, pulling us that way. Because it's that thing inside of us, the controller, the will, Chedana in Pali. This is actually what agitates the mind. It's craving. And when we learn how to let go of that source of agitation, then the mind becomes calm and peaceful. We have to find out why the mind moves. What causes it to agitate? When we see that, that's our will coming from us, the controller, the doer, the complainer. When we see that, and we can actually very easily, once we see the cause, stop that cause, calm down this will, let things be, let things go. And you'll find that the mind becomes still all by itself. When you remove the cause of the problem, then the problem disappears. So it's a hard thing to do, to see that, because it goes against the grain, and it does mean you have to let go of a lot of yourself, a lot of the ego, a lot of the sense of identity, enough to let go of being the controller, the one in charge. Even during this meditation, being a backseat driver is not good enough. You have to be able to sit in this vehicle called meditation and just allow it to take you wherever it will, without you getting involved. It is very much like taking your hands off the driving wheel, feet off the pedals, and see what happens. You find that meditation becomes so easy, so natural, so deep, so peaceful, so blissful, when you get out of the way. So this is learning how to relax the body, is actually starting to learn how to let go of this controller or will. Because most of the time the stress we have in our bodies is because we've been pushing it around so much. I've been pushing my body around the last week, doing very many things. But now I realize this is retreat time. It's a time just to rest the body, to relax it. So we're mindful, we're aware of the feelings in the body. And it's not just mindfulness, it's kindness as well. When we add kindness to our mindfulness, then that is a powerful combination. I know that in some meditation techniques we talk about mindfulness a lot, but it does not work that well when we don't add the magic ingredient of kindness. So I think it was last October, I was teaching at a seminar on mindfulness in Sydney, mind and its potential. And one of the presenters, he was a professor from Stanford University who does experiments on mindfulness, decided to do a test of taking half of his volunteer students on a meditation retreat for one day, doing mindfulness. And the other half he sent to a resort to take spa all day. Jacuzzi, massage, relaxation in a spa in California. He wanted to compare the results. Does meditation relax you more than the spa? And the results were very clear. The people who went to the spa were far more relaxed. What did that tell you? What that tells you is that many people, when they meditate, they're not relaxing themselves. You better go to a spa if you really want to relax rather than do that type of meditation. However, the meditation we do here is not just those mindfulness techniques. It has a crucial difference to it. The magic ingredient which was lost in the experiment done by this professor from Stanford was compassion, kindness. So we use mindfulness together with kindness. So you become aware of your body. What does it need? And you're kind to it. If it needs a rest, give it a rest. If it needs a cup of tea, give it a cup of tea. You're already limiting yourself by keeping these 8 precepts during this retreat. You can't have a meal in the evening. You know, you're not supposed to talk with each other. And please keep that rule of noble silence. Because it's important, because if you start talking to someone else, you're disturbing not just yourself, but the other person. And for those of you who want to help others keep that noble silence, if someone starts talking to you, don't talk to them back saying, no, you're breaking the noble silence, stop talking, because then you've broken your noble silence as well. So what to do if somebody is talking, just take your finger and put it in front of your mouth and say, shh. That's enough. People should know that you don't want to be talked to. And if I think I said this the last time I gave a retreat here, people who talk a lot, just have a look at, you know, in each of the rooms is that figure on the cross. And that's what happened to the last person who broke noble silence in this retreat. That's a warning to you what might happen if you keep breaking noble silence. No, of course that doesn't happen. But nevertheless, please, you know, keep it quiet. Please keep silent. It's not only good for you, it's good for the other people around. You don't need to talk. Very often sign language is more than enough. So keep quiet, especially at night time. Because I know sometimes in previous retreats, people are kind. I mean, they want to try make sure their friends are okay. But they're doing okay anyway. Your job is just to leave them alone. Your job is just to go back to your room, have a rest, or be quiet, meditate, or whatever. So remember the compassion and kindness in this retreat to other people as well as to yourself. All those 8 precepts, that's all they are. Just about precepts of kindness and simplicity. So not killing any living beings, not taking what's not ours, just no sexuality during this retreat. There are no men, there are no women, there's only yogis. The exception, the only time that distinction applies is when you go to the toilet. So please go to the right toilet, not the wrong toilet. You are a man, you are a girl, so please don't go to each other's toilets. But other than that, there's very little sort of difference of the genders on retreats such as this. So we don't have any sexuality. And also we don't have wrong speech, and on a retreat, the wrong speech is any speech, except for the times when you have the Q&A in the evening, or in the times when we have the interviews. And the interviews will happen not just tomorrow, because usually give the first day as a time when people can just get into the meditation practice to rest, just to settle down. The interviews start usually on the second day. That will be tomorrow is Friday, on Saturday we'll have the first interviews. And usually I try and see everybody once every 2 days. But please remember, when it's the interview time, it's not the time for sorting out your personal problems. It's supposed to be focused on meditation. Because personal problems are endless. And sometimes you've only got about 10 minutes per person, and you can spend half an hour talking about your family problems, or your financial problems, or these other worldly problems. But please keep the interviews just to meditation. And that's the time you can speak. Other than that, try and keep quiet. And obviously we don't have any intoxicants or non-medicinal drugs. For those of you who, for one reason or another, have some sickness and need to take some antibiotics or other medication, I'm sure that you've talked, I hope, with Bianca, so that if you do need something to eat in the evening, just know, a couple of biscuits or a couple of bread and butter or something, or jam, whatever, something simple just to make sure that the medication doesn't cause you stomach ache, that's fine. Just as long as you got the okay from the manager, Bianca. But other than that, we don't need to eat anything in the evening. There's plenty of snacks such as the tea and the coffee and whatever else that is there for you to drink. So we don't really need to eat in the evening. And fine, it's very easy. After a while, you just don't think about it. Well, you don't think about it. The body's got enough spare in there. So you don't really need to have something to eat in the evening unless it's a medical reason. And of course the next reason, you know, that is the sixth precept of not eating in the evening. Now you're allowed juices because in some traditions they allow milk. In my monastery we don't allow milk, but because of compassion, if you want to have milk in your tea or a glass of milk or a glass of soy milk, that's fine. And we don't have wear any ornaments, no makeup or anything, especially the men, no makeup please. So we can see people as they truly are. And there is no entertainment. There's actually a TV in where the monks' quarters are, but it's never turned on. I sometimes once went on a retreat and every room had a TV, and I said, it's all right to watch the TV on a retreat, as long as you don't turn it on. Because if you face that TV, after a while you can see a reflection of yourself in that TV. So that's why, as long as you don't turn the TV on, it's all right to watch it. But I think you don't have TVs, so please don't use your mobile phones or whatever else you have to try and get any news or whatever. Leave that all alone. The world keeps on going on. You don't need to worry about it so much. And on that thing about mobile phones, if you can sort of try not to have your mobile phone ringing sort of in the middle of the night, or try and contact your stockbroker in New York in the middle of the night, or I don't know what else you get up to. So just leave those mobile phones. If there's an SMS message, you can maybe SMS them back and say, look, I'm getting enlightened, please, butt out. Whatever else it is. So that they don't get worried and concerned. It's amazing, when you let go of the world for 9 days, it's still there afterwards. You're not that important that you have to contact the world every few minutes, even your family. You are actually quite dispensable, and if you don't turn on your mobile phone for 9 days, you find that actually you are dispensable. The world goes on without you quite well, sometimes even better when you don't get involved with it. So it's nice to leave everything alone. And so we don't have any of those sort of entertainments. And lastly, we don't use extravagant furnishings. It's okay to sleep on a bed. When they say high and luxurious beds, that's not a very good translation of the eighth precept. What it really means is not using luxurious furnishings. And those beds you have in this room, these rooms, they're not luxurious. You can sleep on the floor if you want to, sleep on the bed, doesn't really matter. So those are the eight precepts. I don't really need to give you those eight precepts because they're intrinsic to the retreat, and basically you can't do anything else. So just it's up to you to keep them. You know what they are. And keep the noble silence, be kind, be gentle. And during this retreat period, every morning, I'll be giving a talk from 8 till 9. The reason I like giving the talk in the morning, because it actually sets the mood for the day. And the evening period, that's the time for we can do some questions and answers. And again, most of the questions and answers should be on meditation, but if there's other aspects of Buddhism or life you want to ask questions on, that's quite fine. And there'll be a little, usually we have an old ice cream tin or container, which is usually just on the table just at the end of this passageway. And you can write your questions down and put your questions in the container. So I think sometimes it's out just between the dining room and the accommodation units, but you'll see where it is. You can write the question down, we'll answer that in the evening time. So it's a very, very simple retreat, a simple schedule. Outside of those times, it's a time which, you know, you can make use of. And when you're making use of it, I mean, that's why we say, you know, I know early on we used to have these retreats, we'd ring the bell at 4 o'clock in the morning and somebody would go all around the retreat centre ringing this bell early on in the morning. And usually we'd have like lights out at maybe 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock. And you found that what happened was that sometimes by 9 or 10 o'clock some people didn't want to go to bed. And they were sort of bright and they wanted to meditate more, but they felt afraid if they didn't go to bed now they wouldn't be able to get up at 4 o'clock. And that some other people, you know, they sort of they wanted to go to bed early and get up earlier, and 4 o'clock was a bit too early for them. They wanted to get too late for them, wanted to get up even earlier than then. So I found it much better, it's much better for people's meditation to have no wake up bell in the morning, no lights out bell, to have this hall here open throughout the night, throughout the day, so that you can meditate at any time. You can get up at any time. You can go to bed at any time. Because you're adult people now. This is not some school. So this is for you to meditate as much as you feel appropriate. So use your mindfulness and compassion to see what your body needs, what your mind is like, and act appropriately. And any time if you feel tired or then just go back to have a rest at any time of the day or night. And if you are sort of awake, alert, then come and meditate. You can meditate here or you can meditate in your room if you like. The rooms are very like little caves. You may have a lot of solitude in there. And many people prefer meditating in their room. So you can meditate here with other people. Or you can meditate outside under the trees. I would warn you about meditating under the trees in the early morning, because on the last retreat somebody was meditating under the trees when the sprinklers came on. And it was quite a shock for them when they're getting deep into their meditation. All this water started happening all around them and they got soaked. So be careful of sitting outside in the early morning meditating, otherwise the sprinklers will get you. Maybe if you take your soap and towel you can have a shower at the same time. Save time. However, other than that, you can use the beautiful garden outside for meditating, under a tree, here, or wherever there's a nice quiet place. And you can also obviously use that garden for walking meditation. You also have a few other little halls in here to use as walking meditation places as well, or in the corridors, as long as you don't get in the way of other people. So there's many places which you can make use of in this meditation center. For just quiet, reflection, meditation, walking meditation. And of course in the mornings I'll be given more and more instructions on how this should be done. I know that some other meditation retreats, they say you always have to do just, you know, one method, the method of the teacher. There are many different methods of meditation, and they're just like different tools in the workshop. And it doesn't mean that one tool is better than the other. The very skillful carpenter knows how to use many tools, and he sees which tool is necessary for the job at hand. So if you're just working with just a rough piece of wood, this is a simile I wrote in my book Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond. If you look at this, a rough piece of wood, you know, it needs to be planed down first of all to get the saw marks and the burrs away from the surface of the wood, and when it's planed down then you can start sanding it with rough sandpaper, medium grade sandpaper, then fine sandpaper, and only then you get a polishing cloth up to buff it up and to make it shine like this beautiful Jarrah wood we have here in Western Australia. But if you start sanding or polishing on rough wood, you're wasting so much time. A carpenter knows all the different tools and knows when to use each tool. So the different forms of meditation are just like different sets of tools in the workshop of meditation. So you can experiment with those different tools and just see which one works at which particular time. And a skillful carpenter just can take a look at the wood and know straight away, plane is not necessary anymore. I just use some sandpaper and a polishing cloth. In the same way, a skillful meditator just looks at their body and mind and knows what it needs. Whether it needs a rest, whether it needs a cup of tea, whether it needs some exercise, whether it needs some walking meditation, sitting meditation, to see when it's sitting meditation, where it needs just to let go, where it needs to focus on the breath, where it needs to do a this is good enough mantra or whatever else. It can see that. It knows when it needs loving kindness. It knows when it just needs to rest. Skillful carpenter uses mindfulness to assess the job at hand. So you look at your body and your mind, you feel what it needs, and your wisdom and compassion realizes you can't control this body no more than you can control your mind. You work with it, you ease it, you guide it gently, compassionately into the peaceful, quiet states of mind. You can't force the mind into stillness. You guide it, letting go gradually, stage by stage, until the mind becomes peaceful. Once your mind does become peaceful at times during this meditation retreat, which it will do at times, always remember why it became peaceful. What happened? What was the cause for peace? Because it's not just mindfulness and compassion. We use the results of our meditation to grow in wisdom, to grow in insight into what is peace and what causes peace. What causes the inner freedom of the mind and what that freedom feels like. What inner happiness truly is, not just as a theory or something which shows up on a functional magnetic resonance scan in some laboratory. What it feels like inside yourself and where it came from. And little by little, as one uses mindfulness and compassion to create these wonderful states of meditation, the insight and the wisdom understands what they are and where they came from. And that reinforces the mindfulness, compassion and wisdom. And little by little one grows in this skill we call meditation. One knows what mindfulness truly is. It's not just being alert. It's actually where we place that mindfulness and how we strengthen mindfulness. And you'll hear in many of these talks here that mindfulness gets strengthened and has more power the more still our mind is. And that stillness comes from letting go, from non-controlling. The more you control and force, the weaker your mindfulness becomes. That's the basic law of meditation. The more still you are, the more powerful your mindfulness, and the happier you are. That's why in these meditation retreats I stress compassionate, wise letting go. Doing little and just being a passenger and allowing the meditation to happen while you're not driving. Little by little, the mindfulness gets stronger. We understand what mindfulness is. We also understand the importance of compassion as a sister of mindfulness. Because the compassion is something which drives the mindfulness into calming, into easing, into bringing a sense of peace and happiness to whatever we're watching. For example, when you just watch the present moment, very often people can be mindful of the present moment just for a few seconds, but then it just all fades away as you go wandering off into the past or future or into fantasies. Why is that? It's because we don't invest enough compassion and kindness to this moment. If we can invest compassion and kindness to whatever you're experiencing now, you are actually relaxing into the present moment, rather than trying to control and capture and conquer the present moment. You know, controlling, capture, conquering, that's all very aggressive, very violent language, which has nothing to do with Buddhist practice. So when we are kind to the present moment, when we're compassionate towards it, where we open the door of our heart to this present moment, no matter what it is, where we have when we have unconditional love towards this moment, then the moment stays. I sometimes call that unconditional mindfulness. There's that extra bit of kindness and wisdom onto the mindfulness, unconditional mindfulness. When you have that, the present moment stays. You learn an important insight in meditation. To be able to sustain mindfulness on something, you have to have that gentleness and kindness. In the same way, if you want to have a good friend, you can't expect to control and criticize and blame them. Otherwise they won't want to spend time with you. But if you're kind, gentle to a friend, they will want to spend ever more time in your company. Look at, say, the present moment, just like a potential friend. How on earth will the present moments want to spend any time with you if you're so critical, hard, so controlling, when you try and conquer the present moment? It will not work. But if you're kind and gentle, well, I sometimes say, if you smile at the present moment smiles back at you and stays. Compassion and kindness to the present moment is what makes the moment remain. And that's the same with every other stage of the meditation. Without compassion and kindness, the mindfulness becomes impossible to maintain and wanders off all over the place. Now, how many people, when they begin meditation, or even if they've been meditating a while, say the biggest problem is the wandering mind. They can't stop thinking. They're either thinking or they're falling asleep. Why does that happen? And what is the solution? Don't just think that the more effort you put in, then the more those problems will disappear. It's not a matter of effort. People who come on this retreat are very skilled in applying effort. You've learned that at school, you've learned that at work, you've learned that in your life. You know how to struggle and strive. What we don't know how to do is how to be wise. So we don't struggle with things. We don't strive and work hard. We work wisely. So if the mind wanders, why does it wander? Why won't it stay where you put it? It should become quite obvious. The reason why it does not stay in this moment, say with the breath, is because it's not happy there. If you're not happy somewhere, you want to go somewhere else. I know the first retreats which we used to do, there's always people leaving after the first couple of days. They weren't happy here, so they left. These days it's very rare that anybody leaves, because they're happy here. Now it's the same with meditation. If you stay in this moment and you're happy here, you won't want to go anywhere else. So by investing kindness, you generate happiness, which means you can sustain your attention with no effort whatsoever. The mindfulness stays when you add that wonderful ingredient of kindness, compassion, embracing this moment without being critical of it. Too often you'll find, if you're mindful enough, you're very critical of your meditation. You're watching the breath and it's not good enough. No wonder it doesn't stay. Imagine if you had a friend, or a parent, a lover, and they always kept criticizing you, you're not good enough. What would you want to do? You want to leave. You can't stay in a relationship like that. So have a decent relationship with your meditation object. And I said the present moment, that was just an example. Every meditation object which you have to build a relationship with it. A positive relationship, a kind, a respectful relationship, even a respectful relationship with your sloth and torpor, your sleepiness. If you disrespect that natural state of mind and try and fight it and conquer it, you'll find it would just feed the tiredness. Whatever you're experiencing, please respect it. Whatever it is, it's part of nature. It's not a personal failing. Later on we'll talk about the Buddhist idea of non-self. How can it be a personal failing when there's no one there? It's just something which happens. Your job is just to make peace with it, to be kind to it, to leave it alone. And you'll find by such an attitude, things like sloth and torpor and restlessness just don't come up anymore, they fade away. The reason is because you've noticed what causes them and you stop that cause. So the results just don't appear. So little by little you find by being kind to these states, you've understood them, you're kind to them, and they don't happen. The restless mind only happens because of discontent. Always not being satisfied, so you're always going somewhere else. You have to learn how to be satisfied with this. A simile which I've been repeating quite often recently is meditation being like a pause in the journey, a stopover. If your life is like a long walk and you're so tired, but you're always going on to the next thing, on to the next thing, on to the next thing, which is the story of most people's life, always going on to the next thing. What meditation is like is you come to a stone bench, which is lumpy, cold and hard. But it doesn't matter, it's a place where you can sit down. So you sit down even though it feels uncomfortable. You say, this is good enough. And because you're not looking for a more comfortable bench to sit on, you just, this is good enough for you. The longer you sit on that stone bench, the more comfortable it becomes. It's as if, all by itself, without you doing anything, the lumps in the stone seat get evened out. The coldness disappears and it's warm, and the hardness softens until it becomes like a sofa, until it becomes a very wonderful, peaceful, warm, comfortable, what they call lazy boys in Australia. The seat changes by itself, the more content one is with it. Sometimes I use a simile of the old fairy tale in the West of a person who was wandering through the forest and they came across a frog. And the frog said, I am really a beautiful princess and I can make you happy. But first of all, you've got to kiss me. And if you give me a kiss, this ugly frog, if you give me a kiss, I will turn into this wonderful, wealthy, beautiful princess and I'll be your wife forever after. And so the young boy kisses that frog and it turns into a beautiful princess and he eventually becomes a king and they live happily ever after. You know the old fairy tale. My interpretation of this is your mind is like the ugly frog, full of warts, croaks, can never get into meditation. And all you need to do to turn your ugly frog of a mind into a beautiful princess is to give it the kiss of compassion and kindness. So whatever mind state you're in, sloth and torpor, restlessness, going crazy, it's an ugly frog of a mind. Please give it the kiss of loving kindness. Open the door of your heart this moment. This is good enough for me. Be compassionate and kind. Sit down and rest with it. And you'll find it turns out into the most beautiful princess, the jhanas, simply because you've added the kindness, the compassion, the opening the door of your heart to this moment. That's how meditation works. Once you get the trick, the light bulb goes on in your mind, you see what I'm talking about, and you know it works, meditation becomes one of the easiest things in the world to do. And the longer you do this, the deeper you get. By being mindful and kind, everything stops. The more it stops, the more the energy arises. The more the happiness comes. The more you feel powerful in your mind. And the meditation just has a wonderful effect on you. So this is how I'm going to be teaching this retreat. With compassion and mindfulness, learning as we go along, until we do become skillful carpenters. We can just look at our mind, know exactly what is needed. Most of the time, just a bit of kindness and gentleness. And we experience our mind getting more and more peaceful, more and more still. And we find that, yeah, we can meditate. And we experience the joys of meditation, the depths of meditation. Who knows, some of you may be getting into the really nice deep meditations. And there you can do all sorts of amazing, wonderful things like remember past lives. And find out for yourself the power of this mind. But understand, this power does not come from striving and struggling. As Ajahn Chah once told me, as I found out later written in the suttas by the Lord Buddha, that if you want to have a healthy body, you have to exercise it. If you want a strong mind, you have to keep it still. The more you keep the mind still, the healthier, the stronger, the happier, the more powerful it becomes. Not through effort, but through taking away that driving force which hinders the growth of mindfulness, peace and wisdom. So that gives you like a taste of what this meditation retreat is going to be. As for you, really you don't have to do much at all. Just come and sit when you feel like you want to be peaceful. Rest, walk, don't spend too much time just reading books. Read your heart instead. Read this moment. Just look at the trees. Just study the birds. Because those words are like second-hand knowledge. I remember seeing this cartoonist in Australia called Lunig. And one of my favorite cartoons was of this couple who were looking at a television. And on the television there was a program about nature. But you could see on this cartoon through the window was nature was actually happening out there live. Instead of going out and enjoying nature live as it was happening, they were watching it on the TV. That's just like somebody just reading about meditation or reading about Buddhism. When you're in a meditation retreat center, when it's happening all around you. So don't just go reading books. In this retreat, read your heart, read your experience, read your mind, be here when life happens. And don't get some sort of second-hand version of it in a book. And that way, this retreat will take you very deep in the meditation path. And by developing the meditation deeply on this path, you'll also understand more about Buddhism. The last year I've been saying, because somebody once asked me, I forget where and which country, they asked me, the Christians have the Bible, the Muslims have the Quran, the Jews have the Torah. What do the Buddhists have? What is a Buddhist holy book? And instead of saying the usual response to Tripitaka, I never said that, because really that's not the Buddhist holy book. So the Buddhist holy book is meditation. That's what we read for inspiration and for wisdom. So this is the holy book. Meditation. All those words of the Buddha, they came from the same place which you will look in during this retreat. They came from your heart, from your mind, from this deep silence and stillness and peace inside. That is the holy book of Buddhism. That's the holy book of all religions, really. And that's what we want to read during this retreat. It goes so deep inside, so still, we can listen to life. Instead of being told about it, you can experience it rather than just seeing the old pictures. We're right there as it happens, experiencing learning, knowing, letting go. So this is what will happen in this meditation retreat. I'm not going to talk for much longer. Many of you are tired. I know I am tired, had a very busy day. So tonight, have an early night for those of you who want to have a rest. For those of you who've got energy, maybe meditate some more. Just see how it goes. But for the first couple of days, don't worry so much about the time. There'll be no bell in the morning, but I'm sure that you'll all know when it's 7 o'clock. Is it 7 o'clock or 7:30 for breakfast? It doesn't really matter, you'll know when it's breakfast. There's something about the stomach which will actually tell you that something's going on in the kitchen. And you get up and have some nice breakfast. And then you have the lunch afterwards. So just tomorrow, just start tonight, have a nice easy day. Have a sleep in if you want to in the morning. If you get up early, come and meditate or go and have a walk outside. But first couple of days, take it easy. Have we got, okay, a message there? Okay, so before we dismiss, are there any questions anyone would like to ask about the schedule on the retreat or about anything else about the retreat? Is it quite clear? Now, many of you have been on retreats with me before, so you know how I teach. So you know what you're in for. Kind, gentle, peaceful. Just nice, nice, nice. Okay, so there we go. So now it's all up to you. You can carry on meditating here. You can just go back and have a rest. The evening is yours. And I'll see you tomorrow morning sometime. So take it easy.